Now we're recording. So it's Jason Michelle moderating, and our topic today on the speaker series call is guide dogs graduates who also happen to be brave enough and smart enough to be entrepreneurs. And we want to hear kind of what makes them tick, how they got to where they are, what their business is, what their challenges are, how their vision loss plays into it, if at all, and how their guide dog assists them. So I'm going to start off with Stu. I'm giving everyone 7 minutes. So set my timer for 7 minutes. All right, so you've got 7 minutes. Stu, if you want to start us off and tell us a bit about yourself and what you do and why you're here, that'd be great.
Sure, sounds good. Thank you for inviting me and having me speak about this. It's something that I've always wanted to be able to kind of spread this message, because I always wanted it for myself. I wanted somebody to help guide me through this process in this journey of losing your vision, and even a much smaller pool of somebody trying to be an entrepreneur while doing it. So thank you for the opportunity. I'm Stu Starkey, 37 years old. I have a condition called choroideremia. It presents itself a lot like RP in terms of symptoms and progression. When I was a kid or teenager, I had big dreams, like I think most teenagers do. All I thought I had was night vision problems when I was a kid. And my big dreams were I wanted to be an Olympic athlete. I wanted to start a business and earn some financial freedom. And I wanted to solve like one of the world's big problems. And when I was 19, I learned of the condition that I have, choroideremia, and I learned that what the progression was going to be. And that for a few weeks or months really kind of set me back, and had to figure out what that meant for me, what that meant for most of my life, what struggles I'm going to have. And then kind of had a realization that there's nothing I can do about it, so I better get to work. And that's where, like, getting this condition, or learning about the condition that I had, gave me a motivation I never had before. Looking back at my teenage self, I realized that I thought I had infinite time, and I wasn't going to achieve those goals if I didn't work harder at them. And this was the impetus to do that. So after learning about this, I changed to doing parasports and traveled the world doing different parasports that I wanted to try. And when I realized that I needed to grow up at some point and earn a living and work to one of my other goals, which was start a business, I did that. And I got to do that from a perspective knowing that at some point, vision is going to continue to be more and more of a difficulty. So I knew and had this drive that I needed to grow my business fast enough so that I could create a position for myself that I would work best in. So that progression led me to grow to the company that we're at now, where we're a moving company in Western Canada. We have 9 locations. We have a staff of well over 100 people now.
Wow.
And really happy and fulfilled doing what I'm doing. I'm able to choose my purpose, choose my roles, and really add value to the community and to our business. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell, and how my sight loss has influenced my decision-making, how I've grown my business, and the role that I chose within it.
Okay. Do you want me to give you a few questions, or you still got 2 minutes? You got 3 minutes left.
Okay.
So what are your greatest challenges with your business?
Recently I have I was working a lot in Excel, and I was working on operations, and I'm really thankful to be able to give up and hire somebody for that role now, because it allows me to get to do more of the stuff I really enjoy doing, which is business development, business strategy. So that's been a challenge, to learn to give up that role, letting go of some of those responsibilities that I really had a close pulse on, and turn that over to somebody else is certainly a challenge on the visual side. Mm-hmm. In terms of business development, like, an obstacle is I'm now at a point with my vision where I'm not recognizing people. So I can see silhouettes, but I have to, you know, learn by voice. Like, I'm sure, you know, some or most of you on this call have had to go through. And that is something that I'm learning, and learning to accept that it's okay that I don't know the person, that it's okay to ask and say, you know, who am I talking to? I'm sorry, I can't quite see you. And you know, the guide dog has been an incredible introduction to that. It makes me feel so much more comfortable with saying, hey, I don't see that well. Who am I talking to? They get it. Whereas before, I didn't carry my cane very much, and it was a much more awkward conversation.
Yeah. And how do you deal with things like filings, you know, filing your taxes? You know, you mentioned obviously Excel. What about social media? I mean, do you have a presence, and do you have someone that helps you with those things, or do you take those on your own, or how do you deal with that?
Yeah, so we have a team that works, and I actually lead up our marketing department. So I am using the accessibility of my iPhone to handle the content that I really need to be involved with. We just launched a new initiative called the Community of Big Hearts, which is an offshoot of our business, where we're making sure we're trying to have the most positive impact we possibly can sustainably in all the communities that we operate in. So there's a lot of content that ends up going out, and I'm staying on top of it, but it's becoming more tedious with the varying different platforms that I have to use accessibility on. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named David Green in out of Ontario, Canada, that's coaching me on accessibility in my phone.
And we're at 7 minutes, so thank you, and perfect timing. And we'll have you, if you don't mind, take some questions from folks a bit later on.
Of course.
Now, is Stu still out there?
So Jason,
this
Alex,
is Stu. I think.
Rod. Sorry.
Rod.
Sorry, Jason. I'm just going to jump in for a moment. It's Alex with Carbon Solutions Northwest, and I joined you at about 3:58, so I missed the very first moment or two, but I am on the line.
Okay, that's Alex.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, Rod, are you still there?
I am here.
Okay, so I think because I said earlier that I would go to you second, I'm going to keep my word, and then we'll switch over to Alex, if that's okay.
No problem.
So I keep my promises. Many say I don't, but I think I do sometimes.
No problem.
So, Rod, what's your story?
Okay. Well, first, again, I also want to say thank you so much to GDB for inviting me to be on the panel here, and already hearing the first speaker. I'm humbled to hear the story and what's going on. I love entrepreneurship and owning a business. So I'll get into a little bit of my backstory and then kind of funnel through some of the questions. And then if you can help me out with areas that I've missed, that'd be a great blessing. So,
yeah.
As a background, in the early 90s, I had a small tumor about the size of end of a pencil eraser, and I was managing for Safeway up in the Seattle area at the time, and the tumor, I was flying my little airplane. I had a little Grumman T-Cat. I flew in and out of Boeing Field, and I suddenly had lost vision on short final, and full throttled it, and I thought, well, the worst thing I can do is say something to the tower that I don't have eyesight at this point. it actually only lasted for seconds, which seemed like an eternity. And full throttled by the airplane, went around the pattern, and of course the tower says, Grumman 6309 Lima, what are you doing? And I said, yeah, I need to go around. I just need to go around. And so I went around, and everything landed normal. Everything went fine. And I started having these moments of vision being just gone. And I decided when I was having ice cream at Dairy Queen, there was a doctor's office next to it. I thought, I'm going to walk over there and tell them what's happening, because I didn't have any kind of doctor at the time. And this is 94. And just walk in and tell them. As I did, the gentleman that was there had just opened his practice. He was from India, and he was a neurosurgeon. And said, you have a tumor pushing against your optic nerve. And multiple MRIs later, we found out that's what it was, and they thought everything would be fine, had surgery. But unfortunately, the surgery didn't go exactly as planned. They couldn't just remove the tumor. They had to do a bunch of cutting, and it ended up getting rid of the majority of my eyesight, kind of all at one big blow.
Wow.
And so it limited my eyesight down to about 7 to 9 degrees wide.
Wow.
And a little taller than that. So a very small amount. And then over the years, the quality kept getting worse and worse. And my wife and I discussed it over the years and decided it would be time for me to get a guide dog. And now I'm blessed since December 14th, during graduation, to have Cairo, my guide dog. And GDB has changed my life in that way. Getting to the questions about entrepreneurship, which is my excitement of life, my burning passion. I grew up as an entrepreneur. My parents owned a bakery in Portland, Oregon, and largest sit-down pastry shop in the entire area. They owned it for 19 years, and they could see it almost 100 people, and it was wonderful growing up. I remember taking naps on the flour sacks and dreaming of what my bakery would look like someday, and had one over in St. John's for a little while, and it did not go as well over there for me at the time, but it was certainly my first taste of after being with my parents for lots of years and then having my own. Then started going to college and finishing business degrees as I got a little older and went to work for Safeway and managing for them, always wanting to become back into the entrepreneurship field because that was my life. And I got business degrees, eventually ending up with 9 degrees and a doctorate in law, focused wow. in business law. And now I'm a principal broker owning Mount Hood Realty, and we have 2 locations with about 15 brokers working for us. So much smaller than the first gentleman, but we love our little business. And we have an office in Camas, Washington, and then in Troutdale, Oregon, which is just outside of the Portland metro area. So choosing the life of entrepreneur, it really at first was chosen to me. And I learned, you know, that I would work half the night with Dad and go to school, because school is always very important. And then come back and clean the bakery after school, do homework, and it all, you know, of course, would start over again. And getting into this, why did I pick the field? Well, the field really was largely picked for me. But the question I really want to deal with is, how does blindness impact my field as an attorney and as a principal broker of a real estate brokerage? And it impacts it a lot. Because people come to the business with a lot of preconceived notions that you can't sell a house because you're blind. I would get out with my cane, and lots of times, like lots of people, I would try not to use my cane over the years, and that, of course, just did not work well, as I would end up running into my client, and the client wondering, why are you running into me? And I would have to tell them the story, and then it always kind of came off odd. So I started, and over the years, I had to use my cane more and more and more. It is so much easier with the dog because, number one, people love animals. Overall, people love animals. And it is an icebreaker. I have actually gained clients because of the dog. People come out and see it and realize, wow, you are actually doing the business. You're doing the job.
And it
becomes such a social icebreaker. So Cairo, his name is Cairo. Cairo and I have taken on a Facebook presence of the team that does real estate, and we call ourselves the real estate guru team. And I also go around the state teaching real estate law in Oregon and Washington, and then some nationally. I do some speaking, and I'm now taking him with me to those events, and people are falling in love with him, which is important to me, for people to like him, but also that breaks the ice for people to understand my business and how I'm doing the business. There are still some problems, because legally, while disabilities are a protected class in all 57 jurisdictions, a person's house isn't. And there are times that people are saying, you're not welcome to bring your guide dog into my home, and that would be a right of theirs to say that. Yeah. And so far I've been able to overcome that, either by explaining, you know, that the dog is respectful and all of that, and we've been over to overcome, or the client just sides with me and says, well, that's ridiculous, and I'm not going to buy your $500,000 house. So it's worked out quite well for me so far. And I'm sure I'll come against a time that's going to need more explanation. But the excitement of that has been just really crazy. I continue also on the side to teach at the university. I teach law, and I was tenured faculty years ago, and gave that up because I love entrepreneurship so much that I wanted to own my own business and just focus mostly on that. But I also, my love of teaching, I'm currently teaching a law class from Multnomah University, and of course, the students dearly love Cairo, and it served as the initial icebreaker in the classroom. As this week, we're going over contract law, and you know, what are these different contracts? And of course, as you all know, it's a contract that we have with Guide Dogs for the Blind on how we care for the animals. And it's I didn't pull that contract out, but it's a nice discussion point as to many things in life become contracts, and so using my experiences as an icebreaker to the students and opening this concept up. Probably the number one question I get right now from people that are randomly at the university or just around is how do you know when the dog wants to go to the bathroom? Mm. It's odd to me that would be the big question, is how do I know? Well, I have him on a schedule. He poops at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. and that's it. He has to wait.
Perfect.
And we laugh, again, using it for an icebreaker. We just laugh about it.
Right.
And it really we're
a little over 7 minutes, but I wanted to let
I'm
you
sorry.
Know because it's
sorry,
so
sorry
fascinating.
About that. Yep.
No problem. I trust me. I know. I'm also a lawyer, so I have to people have to physically remove me from the microphone forcibly with the
totally
jaws of life.
Get it. My wife uses the sheep herder's hook on me regular.
Yeah, I have to often be dragged away. But so are you living in Portland? Is that, am I correct in the
Literally I live in Corbett, which is a suburb.
Okay.
It's in the Columbia River Gorge. But
beautiful.
Portland's close enough.
Close enough. Okay, so thank you, Rod. That was fascinating, and again, I'm sure we'll have some questions for you a little later.
Sure.
Alex, are you still there? Buddy?
Yeah, I'm still here, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So, Alex, over to you, my friend. 7 minutes or
sure.
more.
Well, it's funny that we got a couple of lawyers on the phone. I'm not a lawyer, but I managed a law firm in Eastern Europe, in Kiev, Ukraine, for many years. And, you know, for a long time, I would say up until my mid-30s, I was able to fake it as a sighted person because I had sort of 2150 in one eye and 2200 in the other eye. So I could ride a bike. I could read 12-point font. I could use a mouse if you put it on the large setting. And so I didn't, you know, I had to deal with my blindness to a certain extent, but I didn't have to deal with it to a large extent because for the most part, I was able to fake it. in the early 2000s, and certainly by 2010, I was suffering quite a bit of vision loss from glaucoma. And then I went in for what turned out to be a series of surgeries towards the latter half of 2010 to replace the pumps in the eye that regulate pressure. And those surgeries didn't go well. And so I lost all the vision in that eye in a period of 48 to 72 hours. And then I was faced with the decision of, do I want to try and do the same surgery in the right eye, which still had okay vision, with sort of a 50-50 chance of success? And I said, no, I would rather go blind sort of painlessly, inexpensively, and most importantly, I would rather control that decline. And so I made a conscious decision that, that I was going to go blind slowly and under control. And as I was going blind, I was going to take all the steps that I needed to take to become a successful blind professional. By the time I left the practice, the Ukrainian practice, I was a 10% partner, at least in the revenue end of things. And so I took that money, which was sort of $50,000 to $60,000, and that's something you don't get when you're 37, 38 years old with a wife and kids and a mortgage. And I used that money to reinvest in myself, because basically I could take a year off and figure out, how do I reinvent myself? And I knew what I wanted to do, because I'd been doing it with some of our clients through the firm for the past 2 or 3 years. And that was, I wanted to work on projects that either generated renewable energy or reduced greenhouse gas emissions in some way or other. And so in late 2006, I sold my share in the firm, and in early 2007, I launched Carbon Solutions Northwest. I don't have the degree of success in terms of financial numbers that Stu and Rod have. On a good year, I'll make $100,000. 2009, which is the worst year, I made less than $40,000. But it is what it is, and I've had some great clients. Most of my work is centered around helping folks that want to launch a renewable energy project understand whether that project makes sense, running different project scenarios, developing different pro formas, helping them with business development. Business development is a passion of mine. I love business development. And Excel is something that I'm very accomplished in now. But I'll tell you this, when you're using Excel as a blind person, until you learn how to use it well, it's a bit like standing on the beach and looking at the beach through a straw, because you can only see one cell at a time. So maybe you're looking at a piece of sand, or maybe you're looking at a piece of water. You've got to develop strategies to make Excel useful for you. Some of the challenges that I faced, outside of the challenges associated with learning to use JAWS and learning to use accessibility in your iPhone and so forth. I guess on the accounting end of things, taxes are always a pain in the ass, and it is what it is. You got to learn to live with it. I have my daughter develop my, go into online banking and develop my revs and expenses for me on a yearly basis. I'm quite accomplished in terms of, navigating websites and that sort of thing, but I'm not good at kind of developing a solid LinkedIn presence or that kind of thing. I have another daughter who's a marketing major at Oregon State University, and she's going to start helping me manage, a blog and beefing up my LinkedIn presence and revamping my website and so forth. But I've gotten good clients over the years. I've had clients like Wellens, which is a major manufacturer of forest products, equipment, including biomass-fired energy systems. I'm currently doing a lot of work for the Northwest Gas Association. That work is centered around transitioning Northwest fleets from diesel to conventional and renewable natural gas. And I've done a lot of work for Northwest Natural Gas, helping them figure out how to clean up their fuel mix. That's just a few examples of the types of clients that I've been working for. I helped the town of Lakeview, or in Southern Oregon, get off of fuel oil for heating their town and onto a geothermal resource. And I helped a client out in Eastern Oregon develop their wind farm. That looked like helping them market their renewable energy certificates. And then once their project had crossed the finish line and they were cutting the ribbon on it, I helped them monetize a $1.4 million tax credit that helped them pay off the bulk of the debt associated with that wind project. So that kind of gives you sort of a flavor for who I am and what I do. Obviously, I'm multilingual. My dog, his name is Frisco. He's my second dog. He's very different from my first dog. My first dog had kind of a Boy Scout personality. Yeah, I'll be there. You know, just don't mind me. I'm over here in the corner. This dog is kind of like, hey, you know, I got something I want out of life. What about me? So he's smarter than the old dog, but he's definitely got opinions about what his life should look like. But I completely agree with Rod's comments. From a business development perspective, the dog is a total icebreaker. And actually, I think I'm more effective than many sighted people because I have the dog, because people want to talk to me and they want to talk about the dog. And in talking to me about the dog, we start other conversations. So that's a little bit of background about me, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
I thought you were about 15 seconds away from 7 minutes. So that's pretty amazing, your time management. Good skill to have.
Well, speaking of time management, another thing I would say is that, you know, to be successful, especially for anybody, but especially as a blind person, you've got to have a database. You've got to have a database that keeps track of all your contacts and tells you what you've done with whom and what you're going to do next with that person, with all the people in your database. Otherwise, you're just fumbling around.
Thank you very much. Did Kayanne join us?
Yes, I'm
Kayanne
here.
On the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. So last but not least, we have Kayanne. So hopefully you've been following the format. So
yep.
Off you go. 7 minutes.
You know, unfortunately, I'm going to have to run. Sorry.
Okay.
I can I email someone with a question? Who would I email?
Maybe Teresa.
Is that who I get email, Teresa?
Sure. Teresa,
okay.
Will take your email.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Bye bye.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, that's a classic entrepreneur. She's got stuff to do, you know.
That's
that was,
right.
Yeah, that was okay.
You don't let grass grow under your feet, right?
Sure.
Well, I'm Kayanne Rausch. I am the owner, principal owner, anyway, of Guidelights and Gadgets. We live out here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We moved here about 4 years ago from Boston, where I had lived for 20 years. And during that time, well, first of all, my resume looks like a patchwork quilt of things that I've done. I was never afraid to make a change when I needed to, and I explored in a lot of different directions. I actually had done some business-related stuff the few years that I tried the vending stand program that was available to me. And actually, I came away with some good skills from that of how to maintain, contacts, deal with vendors, deal with the public, although I was pretty good on that one already. But how to structure yourself in a business to be able to effectively, as you mentioned about the database, knowing where you were with the many contacts that you have and know what the next steps are. I'm a person of next steps, and that that has carried me very well. I started this. Now, my husband, Barry, he is totally blind. I am legally blind. He has been for some years doing a vending kind of vending is probably not the right word. He's been an entrepreneur most of his life in one way or another. He is another attorney. There seems to be a lot of that going around. Yes, well, and his initials are BS, so need I say more? Anyway, so on the side, from his long career as a medical he terms this so much better than I do. He basically would take over hospitals. He would become the CEO of hospitals and insurance plans and whatnot, and pull them out of the hole and get them profitable again. So he, that was his thing. But on the side, he loved gadgets and loved to share with others things that were going to be helpful. So for many, many years, Barry would have his little gadgets, and he would go to you know, a conference here or there, talk to a local group. So that was actually how I met Barry, at one of those little presentation things. But anyway, after we were together for a while, I decided I would really like to have my own piece here. In the entrepreneurial thing. I just really was so tired of being an employee of somebody else and really wanted to be able to do something for myself, to transition to my own.
Noise. So, can you ask everybody?
The background noise there.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That's better. Everyone mute your phone. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So I decided, I was working my first dog at the time. Her name is Melody. She was an amazing addition to my life. And I found that going to these conferences and whatnot, there wasn't much for available for guide dog handlers and dogs. And I thought, well, Barry does his electronics thing, and he does it really well. How about if I do something with equipment and toys and everything related to guide dog grooming and travel and, you know, some of the gadgetry as well, although most of what I do is not electronic. So that was really, really, really well received. People were very excited about it, as was I. We ended up naming our company Guide Lights and Gadgets. Guide Lights was in reference to my first dog, Melody, who I always called my Guide Light. And Gadgets, well, that's what Barry did. So Guide Lights and Gadgets it was. Since then, we've added a line of leather goods. Blind people love to carry around stuff, and you've got to have stuff to haul your stuff around in. So we sell tons of leather products. It's a really strange marriage of merchandise, but we make it work. Most of our business is face-to-face or over the phone. We found that e-commerce didn't work well for us because our audience is primarily the blind community. And we found that if you haven't seen the item and you haven't touched the item or handled it in any way, oftentimes what you get then in the mail, it wasn't what you expected. So we were getting like 35% returns on our e-commerce business, and just decided that we really need to be able to talk to people. We need to be able to put things in their hands. So primarily now we go around to the conferences, to the state and national conferences, and a few other oddball things, and work one-on-one with people. And we have a blast doing it. At this point, we're both retired. I did transition out of my government job about 6 years ago now. And Guide Lights and Gadgets gave me a really wonderful entree into the world of retirement, even though it isn't really quite retirement. But when you have as much fun doing what I do, it doesn't feel like you're working. So you keep hold of the loose ends as best you can. You develop systems, you develop relationships, you develop product, you keep track of all those things, and you keep track of who you're doing business with, what you did in the past, what next steps there might be with this person, and develop very personal relationships. My guide dogs have been huge in this. Up until, let's see, last September, I lost my first dog. I had her, at one time I had her, I had my second dog, Thor, who retired, and then my newest dog, Deborah, started a year ago. So for about 10 months, I had a pack of guide dogs here. And it was an amazing dynamic. And as everyone else has said, it's amazing how people warm to that furry, wiggly thing down there. And I can't tell you how many times I hear from people, oh, I'm just dying to pet her. I'm not going to do it because I know I'm not supposed to, but I am just dying. She's so beautiful. On and on they go. And it's an instant icebreaker. Then I start talking about the different, you know, why it is as it is and what she's done for me. And it then transitions into more substantial, meaningful dialogue regarding the business. Now, since then, we've kind of expanded beyond just the blind community. There are other legitimate service dogs that can use most of what I carry. And people with pet dogs. We happen to move into a community that is just loaded with dog owners. So we've kind of expanded ourselves. And everybody loves leather. I don't care who it is. Got some great stories around product, but we don't have time for all that. We love what we do. When we stop loving what we do, we won't do it anymore because it's tough work. It's long, you know, long hours when we're on the road, when we're hauling all our merchandise with us. It's exhausting. We're not getting any younger either. When it's not a lot of fun anymore, we will repair it. But it's hard to think about that.
So how do you advertise? If you said your e-commerce is a big part of your business, do you have it? How do you spread the word? You still have a website? Maybe I'll throw that question out to the panel, actually, because I think we can move on to questions now. How do you folks advertise your business? Is that a challenge for you?
I'll jump in here. This is Rod, and talking about. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. My real estate business. Advertising is quite expensive when done electronically. We put a lot into advertising. To be candid about it, we spend between the two offices about $12,000 a month in electronic advertising, whether that's paying for Zillow, Trulia, Homes.com, Realtor.com, and social media campaigns. People think all this is free. It is free to the consumer, but to the businesses to get your advertisements up there, it's quite expensive. So, you know, it takes sales just to support the going engine of all the advertisement. However, we get about as much, and we're making huge pathways in this, out of just going to chambers and networking events as we are with all of this other dollars, you know, the $12,000-$14,000 a month that we spend in advertising has seemed to get us going and keep us going at first, but now all the chambers and networking and repeat customers and direct mailing to our past customers, we're finding that that is probably the path to success. The old-fashioned touch the person, do a business deal with them, keep in touch with them, and become real to them has ultimately, I believe, is the future of our business.
I can add on to that. That's Stu here. That we used to spend a whole pile of money on yellow page advertising and pay-per-click on Google, and realized that cost a lot of money and wasn't a big return on investment. So what we did was we invested more in content and education and being thought leaders in our industry, as well as we took the leftover budget and we just started giving back to the community in a way that would be recognized by the community as well. And we're doing that in an authentic way. We're talking to our listenership and letting them know, look, like, we want to give back to community, the charity partners that we have. When we're giving free moves or other things, we say, look, like, we want to give back. One of the criteria is we just want to know, can you get the word out there about what we're doing? We're not looking for straight advertising. All we want people to know is that we're doing this so that the community will support us more, so we can do more of this. It's more of a, we found a more authentic way to market, where we're doing more good than lining the pockets of Google or Yellow Pages or whatever.
And Stu, what city do you live in?
I'm now home-based in Winnipeg, Canada, but I have lived all over Western Canada. We have offices in 9 different cities, and I've lived in half of them.
Cool. I'm in Toronto, but go Jets.
Go Jets.
Awesome.
I think
this is Rod again. Can I chime in there again?
Sure.
So just to add one more comment about that, if I was to rebuild the business, social media campaigns have become over the years such a crutch, and they're so wildly expensive, whether it's, you know, pay-per-click, like Stu mentioned, which feels at first like you're not spending a lot, but it wraps up to a lot right away. I mean, hundreds and thousands of dollars, and Zillow, which is just crazy expensive. If I was to redevelop the business, I would develop it based upon networking, face-to-face networking, come and meet me, which, of course, Cairo's there now, and that's wonderful. Doing more and more that way, giving to schools, being around. I'm going to basketball meetings and basketball times right now, and my wife explains to me what's going on, and it causes a big conversation that I'm there with the guide dog. And that kind of face-to-face advertising, it's so real, and people want to know you. So,
especially with our dogs.
That's for sure.
Exactly.
Yes.
Jason,
can I ask a question?
I'm just going to, I was going to open up the floor to anyone who has good questions at this point. Yeah, go for it.
Thank you. So this one has become a challenge for me. I'm doing a podcast now, so I'm interviewing guests on our community initiatives, and I'm struggling reading my notes. And so does anyone have tips, tricks, or are they using Braille to, on the fly, write down notes to remind yourself to come back to? You know, for example, even this talk here, like, there's a few things that I would have liked to have said and had made a couple notes on, but didn't get to it because I had forgotten. Is there a way to remind yourself with little to no vision of those notes on the fly while you're talking to somebody?
I want to hear you. I mean, an earpiece can help a little bit for those that need an earpiece for on the fly. If you are in control of a small device in your hand that you can control that way, there are some tricks that way. Or have somebody, of course, off stage or off mic that is cueing you. My wife often is giving me a note here and there as to what to say, whether I catch it or not is another story, or she has to kick me in the knee to get me to realize what she's doing. But I have seen people do that.
Great, thank you.
One thing I do... You're not a Braille reader, right?
I am not currently a Braille reader.
Okay.
So, sort of Braille. Go ahead.
I guess a good way would be, again, the earpiece and good use of voiceover, I would say. Just like, or something that makes, so you can jump quickly from heading to heading, so you could, like, you don't have to read too much. And I suppose you need to make them concise so that it could be distracting to hear the thing babble in your ear as you're speaking about something else. But I guess,
go ahead.
I would suggest doing something like that on a Victor stream, because you can move either like by a chapter situation or minute or by so many seconds in an earpiece.
Another thing I do this in court a lot is I have certain points I want to cover, or certain themes, and I count them. So I say I've got 8 themes I want to cover. And so I try and every time I go to a new theme, this is number 2, this is number 3. And if I come up and I've only gotten 6 and I want 8, I know I'm missing 2. So I got to figure out what I'm missing. So there are, I think, little memory tricks you can do if you can have some pre-planning. To help you out, to kind of organize your thoughts.
So Alex here. So okay. I got to give a presentation at the Washington Trucking Association Truckers Outreach Forum next week. It's a 10-slide thing, and you know, I can probably memorize 10 slides, but then again, you're under pressure, and you know your dog is looking for chocolate chip cookie crumbs on the floor, which always happens. You know, I'm going to send the PowerPoint to the conference organizer, and I'm going to ask them to change slides for me. And I'm going to have my computer with me, and I'm going to arrow down. I'll have a separate Word file. They'll say slide number 1, intro. Slide number 2, you know, capital expense. Slide number 3, fuel expense. And it will just remind me what I'm supposed to be talking about in conjunction with each slide.
Yep. Perfect.
Okay. Any other questions? I like that. Thank you.
Yeah, good. Any other questions?
I would just like to make a comment. If you know, if you are working on Braille, if that is a possibility for you, I think that you might find that just by writing 1 to 3 keywords on index cards in Braille, where you're not having to worry about, oh, can I read this paragraph? Is my, you know, am I fast enough? Can I keep up with the line tracking? Just by some keywords, often that's what I do to keep on track with things. Just a simple word or two.
I think that's all I need is 1 to 3 words is cues. And can you do that on the fly? Like, so let's say you're having a conversation with somebody, they're giving a long response, and there's 2 or 3 thoughts in there that you wanted to respond to. But I feel like I'm getting older and I don't trust my memory as much. So can you jot down on your Braille device to remind you of those 3 things to circle back to?
Yes, we can.
I think you can.
Yes, you
know, my husband does it on the fly all the time. That way, he just needs a few words.
Yeah, you absolutely could do that. But then again, something as simple and inexpensive as just an index card with a word or two, you would be amazed at how that can help you.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? For our esteemed panelists.
I'd like to, this is Rod, add in a couple things if I got a chance here. There's a question I skipped over about the accounting and bookkeeping, and you know,
right.
how do I deal with that? Can I see something to that for a moment?
Go for it.
So
please do.
I believe strongly in utilizing our skill. We all have skill sets. Everybody has skill sets. And all of our skill sets are somewhat different. And I studied in law school, taxation and all that. And I love numbers and that kind of thing. However, while I love it, it is not my burning passion. I believe that everybody should be going after, if you're an entrepreneur, your burning passion. My burning passion is human relationships. Networking, human relationships, getting to know people, and getting, for me, it'd be, let's go take a look at a house. Let's talk about that. What are your needs? Get them all the way to the point of the offer. Make an offer. And then once they make an offer, I hand the deal off to another person in my company. Go close the deal. And I'm happy to split commissions, whatever it has to happen at that point in time, so that I can move on to the next person I can impact in the best way. That doesn't mean I'm never going to have another say with them. Of course I am, but I mostly refocus. When it comes to accounting, it's probably not my best use of time. So I hire accountants, I hire bookkeepers that keep that part of the world up for me. I'm blessed with an amazing memory. Speaking to the lawyers here in the bunch, as you may know, there are 3,611 legal doctrines that are possible to test on any bar exam, and I've taken a bunch of them. I used to own a company called Bar Exam Essentials and train people how to pass the bar in that particular state. And it's all, most of the bar exam is about knowing how to interact and analyze the elements, like negligence, duty breach, causation, damages, two major cases that come with it, and three defenses. And if you can remember the 3,611 things, you're going to pass. If that's one of your skill sets, use it to your best advantage. Like I'm using the ability to get in there and network with people to my best advantage. You don't have to be good at everything. Find people to partner with. People will help.
You're referring to Donahue and Steve Stevenson on that one?
Yes.
The Law of Torts. Snail and the Ginger Beer. There you go.
Very good. Yeah, I love it. Love it. Yep.
Oh boy, I feel like a nerd. I love it too. So, anyone else have any suggestions about? Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, what is the name of the podcast that you say you do?
Thanks for asking. It's called The Community of Big Hearts.
Community of Big Hearts. Okay. Thanks.
And what's it about?
It is about inspiring people in the community, no matter who they are, to try and give back to the community. And we try to lead by example, myself and the producer, Ryan, and use our businesses to try and impact and show how little it takes to have way more impact. And in fact, what we found is that us and the other people who end up giving back are getting even more just by giving. So there's a lot of stuff I'm learning along the way, and it's all so positive. It's not just about helping the people in need. It's about creating a community. And that community that we create has this huge positive effect. And it combats those things that are becoming a real issue in our society today through social media, where, you know, so many people are now logging so much time in social media. And it's actually like counter to the term. It's called social media, but you're not actually getting a real social interaction. You're getting the highlights of somebody else's life. And then you end up comparing yourself in your own head to somebody else's highlight reel. And it actually gets people to remove themselves even more. So all those things kind of combined, we're trying to inspire others. We deal a lot with business leaders and charity leaders, find out their story. And we either want to help the charity leaders, encourage others to help that organization or start their own charity, or we challenge the business leaders to give back. And then usually when they accept, we make sure we hold them accountable.
Wow, Community of Big Hearts, right?
The Community of Big Hearts, yeah.
Okay.
Very cool. I love it. Awesome. It reminds me of the giver's game, which the more you give, the more you get.
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
Fantastic. We've got about 5 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Does anyone else have any more questions for our, I should say, distinguished and illustrious panel? Any other questions? Anyone,
hi, guys.
Anyone,
it's Teresa. Hi, all. It's Teresa. This has been such a great program, and I really want to thank all of our panelists for sharing their stories with us. And I'm going to definitely, this has been recorded. I'm going to post it on the Guide Dogs website and the alumni section. So so more folks can also take advantage of the learning. But it was just really fascinating, and I really want to thank you, and thank you, Jason and Amit and all the rest of the team that put this together. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Does anyone have any closing, parting thoughts?
Thanks, everybody.
This is Roxanne Calabro. I just wanted to thank you all for sharing all of your experiences. I'm retired, and I'm also an attorney, but I did a lifetime of dispute resolution. So I know what you're going through, and it just sounded like, you know, a walk through my life with the, you know, faking and trying to take notes when, you know, things were going on and things like that. So thanks for sharing your stories.
Thanks, everyone.
My final thought would be, if you're not in business today, why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Good parting thought. Good parting question for us to all ponder. But thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Guide Dogs to the Blind.
It was a great call, and thanks to Teresa for helping out, and to Amit.
Thanks for the invitation.
Kelly,
yeah,
Indiana,
thanks for having me.